We'll then call upon our brother Mike to deliver his third class this afternoon entitled Archaeology in Jericho.
Okay, young people. So we tied up the first two classes. Now we're going to move into something quite different. We're going to shift gears. Not so much looking at Joshua's character as looking at the accuracy of the Bible in the time of Joshua. When I was going through the book of Joshua and just looking at it for myself, just reading it through a few different times, you know, as they say, like different translations, getting familiar with the chapters as I was preparing for the study, I thought to myself, this is a big story. There should be something left of Jericho. There should be something there, archaeologically speaking. And it's not the kind of thing that I'm really drawn to. It's not like I've done a lot of looking into the Bible from the aspect of archaeology or really delving into that kind of thing. So it's new to me, and I didn't really know where to begin. I had one book on my shelf that my dad always recommended to me. It was called The Bible as History. Has anyone ever heard of that book? Yeah, okay. So I started reading through that, and it was written like the 50s, I think, or the 60s, by a man called Werner Keller, who actually went about to disprove biblical archaeology, to prove that wherever the cities in the Bible were, if you looked at them in archaeology, you wouldn't find them, trying to disprove the Bible, basically, and saying it's not accurate. What he found out, it's a classic story, is that it actually was 100% accurate, down to like the very details of what you find. So it's an interesting read. So I was reading through that, and it just so happens that my sister, Laura Morgan, she's been married for like years. she goes to the Cardiff Ecclesia with her husband, Brother Jeremy Morgan, and Lean Rittmeyer goes there. Brother Lean Rittmeyer goes to their ecclesia, and he's a brother who's done a lot of archaeology, one of the foremost archaeologists in the world on the Temple Mount. So you've probably seen his books or some of the pictures that they have. Actually, the ESV Commentary Bible, I believe it's got the Study Bible. It's got a lot of his charts and his like pictures of the Temple Mount and the rest of it in there. So I reached out to him and said, "Look, I'm using this one book. Do you have any recommendations for Jericho? I don't know if you studied Jericho." So he sent me back his real quick email and it said, "The Bible's history is very inaccurate and very old." And he said, "Here's some great resources." And he listed a whole bunch. Some websites, and then some articles. And I bought one online and took it. So it's so great to have a resource like that in the community, because he basically said to me, I know Dr. Bryant Wood. It's one of the guys that we're going to discuss. Not a Christadelphian, definitely a Christian. And we're going to talk about his findings. He said, "I know Dr. Bryant Wood. I worked with him." You know, so it's amazing to have that kind of an ability. He said, "You know, if you need anything from him, just email me and I'll, you know, any questions." So, incredible, really. So, what I want to do is I really want to go through and explain some of the details of what they found when they looked at Jericho. Archaeologists throughout basically the 19th century, sorry, the 20th century, up until today, because things are still being found as we speak, different digs that go on. And it really just sparked my interest in this kind of thing. It's so fascinating, but you know, hopefully by the time we're done, 45 minutes from now, your faith in the Bible will be even more. You'll say, "You know what? I look at this account of Jericho, it's absolutely exactly how they find things now." You know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years later. And that's a real testament to God's writing. This is inspired. It's God-breathed. It's exactly accurate like we would hope. So, as we go through today, I want to try and help us understand the picture of Jericho. And I know this isn't showing up too clearly, but I wanted to show, remember Kadesh Barnea was down here, right? So they finally come into the land, and this is the first city that they take. So they come up, they're basically standing right on the brink of entering into what is now Israel, right? The Dead Sea, and here's Jericho down in the plain by the Jordan. Okay, so it's down in basically, it's not elevated, I don't know what the opposite of elevated is. It's unelevated. It's in a valley. No, but it's on a big plain. So basically where the Jordan slopes in, there's big plains, big flood plains, and by those flood plains is where Jericho is located, the city. And then I just kind of blew it up so you can see kind of some of the cities around here. Jericho is right there. I can't read them. Sorry, right there. Basically where it is, right by the Jordan. So as the children of Israel were like ready to enter into the land, they might have been able to see Jericho from where they were. So as they're there, right by the entrance up into the land, there they are. They can see it. So it's kind of interesting to see that. So what we have basically is two chapters on Jericho that are of interest to us, right? We have Joshua 2, which is all about the spies. Interesting there. Joshua now is using spies. Who he was a spy, right? So when he goes to Jericho, how many spies does he use? Joshua 2 verse 1. He uses two spies to go into the land. How many faithful spies were there back so many years ago? There was two, right? So I think Joshua's really making a point here. I'm not going to send 12. 10 of them will probably tell me lies anyways. I'm going to send 2. So that's what he does, right? He sends 2 faithful spies, obviously. Incredible individuals. We're not going to get into what they're like, but they're amazing. They're basically part of the reason that Rahab became part of the household of faith. Incredible spies who were very faithful in the basically setting them up for success as they went to take on Jericho. So then we have them crossing the Jordan in the chapters in between, and then Joshua 6 that we just read, the destruction of Jericho. So that's what we have. And you know, you're probably familiar with the setting. You can see it there. Jericho, the first verse, it gives a very good idea of what's going on. Chapter 6, Jericho was securely shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out, none came in. It's shut up, it's right there, a city, no one's getting in or out. Walls up to heaven, right? That's what the spies would have said. Impregnable, impossible to beat, and yet somehow the walls come tumbling down. So I want to just show you a picture here. Basically, this is nowadays where the old city of Jericho would have been. Okay, so it's an aerial view. Here's a little road that goes right by it. There's still a natural spring that comes out of Jericho, which has been there ever since the beginning of time. It's the oldest known inhabited city on Earth. On Earth. The first inhabited civilized city on Earth. So this city goes back a long ways. So it's interesting that it's the first city that Israel takes out. I think it's very symbolic. So aerial view of Jericho, looking south. So we're looking down towards the south there. The trenches and squares that you can see here, right? You can see like little niches and little digs and stuff. These are it's squares visible today, and we're going to get back to this lady, are from Kathleen Kenyon's excavations in the 1950s and the more recent Italian-Palestinian excavation, which began in 1997. So I'm going to bombard you with information at the beginning. Try and like soak it in, and then we'll get to like some of the neat stuff in a bit. Because I want to take you through the story of archaeology, what's been done on this place. There's basically some main characters here that we got to kind of understand who they are, okay? So the history of archaeology in Jericho basically started around the turn of the century with these two Germans, Karl Watzinger and Ernst Sellen. And then there's another man who came around 1930 to 1936, John Garstang, very influential, and found some really interesting stuff about Jericho that made Christians really kind of perk up and say, well, interesting findings, you know? Seeing the walls, seeing stuff be burnt in the walls, seeing the way the walls fell apart all at once, and then seeing other things too, like big jars full of seed that was still there, seeds that were that had been unearthed and found by him. And then comes along Kathleen Kenyon around 1952 to 1958. She didn't publish a lot of her findings until many years later, sometimes late 70s and 80s actually. Obviously these people are all dead by now. They've done their work and they've left a lot of their findings and they've died. Now Dr. Bryant Wood, he's been digging in Jericho in the 1990s and actually continues to dig and do different digs as well. So all like very accomplished archaeologists. Definitely this man, actually, and these guys as well, definitely had a bias towards Bible truth. Okay? So they were interested in seeing, they wanted Jericho to match up to what they saw in the Bible. You know, was it burnt? Like it said here, everything was burnt with fire. Did it fall down mysteriously? Were all the walls busted down except part of them, maybe, where Rahab was? These kind of details is what they were looking for. Kathleen Kenyon, on the other hand, was not a Christian, and we'll see that makes a big difference at the end of the day. So there's the main characters that we're going to talk about. So Kathleen Kenyon. Here's something that she says, or that is said about her by Larry Hare, who was someone who was her contemporary that helped her write up her reports. He says, Kenyon's vast legacy in the field of excavation technique and ceramic methodology, oh, big words, not only in the Levant, which is the area of the southern Israel area, but also further afield, are absolutely without doubt. So what he's saying is, look, her stuff is good. Like, when she finds research, when she looks at potsherds, you know, like pots that have been smashed, when she looks at the potsherds and she sees a little shard with, like, a pattern on it, different time periods had different patterns on the potsherds, and we'll take a look at that. He's saying, when what she found, it was impeccable, her research. But this is what she says also, or what he says about her. Her insistence that excavation proceed in narrow trenches denies us, when we use the Jericho reports, the confidence that her loci and the pottery assemblages that go with them represent understandable human activity patterns over coherently connected living areas. I'm going to explain what this means, so hold with me. Okay? The individual layers, insufficiently exposed horizontally, simply cannot be interpreted credibly in terms of function. What he's saying is, when you look at this, he's saying, look, here's Kathleen Kenyon, she did this little part, right? Here's Kathleen Kenyon, she did a little bit right here. She made conclusions from that, based on all of this. Now, I mean, that totally ties in. How do you do Bible study? What's one of the basics of doing Bible study when you're checking out something? Context. Everything's about context, right? So her conclusions came from little tiny squares of research where a lot of her findings were impeccable, like very well done, but it doesn't speak for the whole city. That's interesting. Okay, so that's something to keep in the back of your mind as we look at what she did. So what she found was good, but it didn't explain everything. I think that's one of the keys. So, speaking of Jericho, this is what she said. This is what Kathleen Kenyon said. After she'd done her digs, after she'd looked at the evidence. Can you guys see? Am I in your way? Okay. This is what she said. It's a sad fact that of the town of the town walls of the Late Bronze Age, okay, that's the time period that we're talking about here, within which period the attack by the Israelites must fall by any dating, not a trace remains. And it is true. No one really doubts that it was the Late Bronze Age when Joshua came, okay? So we're not really debating that. So she says it's a sad fact that there were no walls of Jericho by the time Joshua came. That's her findings. There were no walls. So Joshua showed up. There was no walking around the city with walls. There was no walls tumbling down and burning the city. The walls certainly weren't there. That's what she's saying. The excavation of Jericho, therefore, has thrown no light on the walls of Jericho, of which the destruction is so vividly described in the book of Joshua. That's a problem, isn't it? That's a big problem, if that is indeed true. Here's Thomas Holland. He's another man who collaborated with her and wrote books with her about this. Kenyon concluded, with reference to the military conquest theory and the Late Bronze Age walls, that there was no archaeological data to support the thesis that the town had been surrounded by a wall at the end of the Late Bronze Age, BC 1400. Once again, the same thing, right? And what's the conclusion that comes from this? Miss Kenyon's work has presented scholars with the hard fact. I love this, talking about exaggeration, right? To them, it's a hard fact that if Joshua was active with the incoming Israelites, either 1400 or 1200 BC, he would not have been able to capture a great walled city of Jericho, because there was no city of Jericho in these periods. The huge ruins of the Hyksos city gave rise to the folk tale attached to the hero Joshua. So your Bibles are actually part of a folk tale, and what Kathleen Kenyon writes are actually hard facts. What do you say to that? As a Bible believer, what do you do with that? Because this is what it could do to you if we left it there, right? Jericho's walls destroyed long before Joshua got there. That's what Kathleen Kenyon would say. Joshua and Israel never conquered a walled Jericho. Never happened. The story in Joshua 2-6 is obviously made up. It's a myth. It's false. It's not true. That, to me, totally ruins all my faith. If that's true, then I'm just going to throw out the whole Bible. How can I pick and choose? If Joshua 2-6 isn't true, how do I know that Jesus is an actual character? How do I know that what Isaiah said is truly inspired by God? Everything goes out if I don't believe in Joshua 2-6. It's as simple as that, right? Either you take it or you leave it. The canon of Scripture stands or falls by itself, together, as one book. So we have some work to do, right? We gotta dig a little deeper and see what else has happened since Kathleen Kenyon came out with her results. So this man, Dr. Bryant Wood, This is what some of the things that he said, okay? So first of all, he doesn't totally shun everything that Kathleen Kenyon has done, because he also agrees that a lot of the work that Kathleen Kenyon did was good work. It just didn't explain the whole story. He says, the meticulous work of Kenyon showed that Jericho was indeed heavily fortified and that it had been burned with fire. So regardless of timing, Kathleen Kenyon said, yes, there were walls at one time, they did fall, and they were burned with fire. That happened. But it was the wrong time. That's what Kathleen Kenyon would say. Unfortunately, she misdated her finds, resulting in what seemed to be a discrepancy between the discoveries of archaeology and the Bible. She concluded that the Bronze Age city of Jericho was destroyed about 1550 BC by the Egyptians. An in-depth analysis of the evidence, however, reveals that the destruction took place at the end of the 15th century BC, exactly when the Bible says the conquest occurred. Interesting. So that was in the 90s and in the 2000s that Dr. Bryant Wood went back and did his own digs on a larger scale with Palestinian, and I think, ironically, Palestinians helped to do the digs to find out that our Bible is actually accurate. So that was really interesting. So what are we talking about? How do you date something wrong? And to be honest, I don't quite understand all this. I've got a little more reading to do. But like I said, it comes down to the potsherds. So you can see that as a city would, you know, be conquered, their pots would break, or else they had a dumping area in the city where they'd throw out all their broken clay pots. And so on these pots, just like today, you want to decorate them up and make them pretty. So each time period, there would basically be a type of pattern on it that would be fashionable for that time period that you can kind of date it to. And according to archaeologists across the board, they say that it's a very accurate science. You can actually like date things very, very accurately to when those pots were around, and then they would change, you know, a few years later. So I thought that's fascinating. I don't really know too much about that. Hopefully I'll learn a bit more. John Garstang, this is back, remember, in the 30s, he did some digs. He found a lot of potsherds, but back then, they didn't have a good idea of potsherdology. They didn't know how to really, like, come up with the dates and the times for each dating of the pots. So by the time Kathleen Kenyon came along, she made one big mistake. She didn't incorporate John Garstang's findings into her own research. So here were all these potsherds. Garstang didn't know what to do with them. Kenyon overlooked them. Dr. Brian Wood comes along and says, we need to take Garstang's findings, we need to take what Kathleen Kenyon found, and then we're going to do our own digs so we have better context, a bigger picture of what went on in Jericho. So that's what's happening. So, pottery found at Jericho by John Garstang. This distinctive pottery, decorated with red and black geometric patterns, was in use only in the 15th century BC, the time of the Israelite conquest, according to biblical chronology. So there's no debate, really, among archaeologists. This pattern here, that's when it occurred. It was in 15th century BC. So based on that, let's look at some of the things that we find if we marry it up, all these findings, with what we find in the chapter we just read, in Joshua chapter 6. We have this verse, Deuteronomy 9, verse 1. Hear, O Israel, you were to cross over the Jordan today to go into to dispossess nations greater and mightier than yourselves, cities great and fortified up to heaven. So wasn't just an exaggeration. This is basically what Moses is saying, inspired by God. These cities were impregnable, if you're looking at them from a fleshly standpoint, right? Here's Dr. Bryant Wood. He's standing next to one of them. This is just the bottom part of the rampart of one of Jericho's walls. It's just the base of it. So they were huge walls, very, very big walls. And I'll show you the structure of them. They might actually change the way you looked at the walls of Jericho, since you were like in Sunday school. I just thought of like big castle, you know, walls. But they're a little different. Take a look at this. This is what they found, okay? Archaeologically, it wasn't just one wall. So on that big mound that we saw, you know, we looked down to the south, and all the little holes in it. This is the mound, and what they found, as cities would be conquered, and then they would build again the next layer of the city, right? So all the time, like Jericho would have been conquered a few times, a lot of times before Joshua comes on the scene. And as they conquer it, layer upon layer of city would grow and grow and grow until you have basically a big mound built on the layers of all the other conquered cities below it. That's what you had in Jericho. And here you had two walls, an outer and an inner wall. And this outer wall was based on this other embankment that was right here as well, which was huge by itself. So think of your perspective if you're this little guy right here, a grasshopper man, right? And he's looking up. If you think about the perspective of you're looking up at the wall, massive wall. Massive wall. 46 feet high from ground level. Obviously, we're talking about the dirt as well. But from the top of this down to the bottom was 46 feet. That's huge. That's more than 4 feet, or 4 stories high in the building. So, how do you conquer that? That's incredible. I mean, these children of Israel just coming out of the wilderness, totally unprepared for something this big. And God takes them to, like, the hardest city to take. Right? That's the first one that they come across. So that's pretty amazing. So that's the way they were structured. Now, I just want to show you this. Here's the plan of the ruins of Jericho. Okay? Now, here's this little area here. 2 8-by-8-meter squares excavated by Kathleen Kenyon, where she found similar evidence for destruction, but misdated it. So she said, yes, clearly there's signs of destruction. We'll get to that. But she misdated it. Said it was destroyed by the Egyptians. Here's the bigger area. Area excavated by John Garstang, where he found evidence for the destruction of Jericho by the Israelites, which he dated to 1400 BC. So you can see his area was bigger. Why Kathleen Kenyon didn't use his research is still a mystery. They don't know why. Probably because it went against what she wanted. That's what I'm going to say. So let me just explain. So now you're taking an aerial view of the city. And you can see here the two walls, right? Two different walls. So take a look at the city. This is what they found. The upper wall, so this wall right here. 6 acres probably the land in here. That's how big the city, the inner city would have been within the city proper. This whole part of the city right here, including the outside wall, 9 acres. Okay? So archaeologists usually go at this time period, usually about 100 people per acre. So there would have been about 600 to 900 people in the city, and then with all the people that lived outside the city, you know, to feed it, all the field, the farmers, all the rest, there probably would have been an area, an amount of people around 1,000 to 5,000 people. So as Israel came, all the people from the fields and the farms and all the rest would have shut themselves into the city, right? As Joshua 6 verse 1 says. So there they are in the city, and here's Israel coming along, right? So that kind of explains the size of Jericho. Sometimes you think, like, the city of Jericho, maybe there was like 1 million people. Well, forget about it. The city back then was a lot smaller, right? They didn't have the plumbing, the abilities, the high-rises, all that stuff. So, here's some interesting details that the archaeologists find. This is where it gets fun. Let's go back to Joshua 3, verse 15. So, here's Israel. They're crossing the Jordan, and there's a detail that's given of when they crossed the Jordan. Joshua 3, verse 15. And as those who bore the ark came to the Jordan, and the feet of the priests who bore the ark dipped in the edge of the water, for the Jordan overflows all its banks during the whole time of harvest, that the waters which came down from upstream stood still, and more details given about them crossing the Jordan. But the detail that I want to show you is, it says what time it was when they crossed over the Jordan to go and take Jericho. When was it? From that verse? Time of the harvest, right? Bringing in the crops, you know, from the fields, bringing them in. And back then, they would put them in big cylinders made of clay. Big storing pots, right? All the cities did it back then. And that's what they did. They didn't have, like, silos like we do. But they had these pots that they would store all their seed in, either to plant again or to use to make food. So Jericho was no different. So this was the time when Jericho would have been bringing in the harvest. So as they crossed over the Jordan, the fields were being, you know, taken down and the grain being brought into the city. And what do we find in the city of Jericho by archaeology? Bryant Wood says, many large jars full of grain were found in the Canaanite homes by John Garstang back in the 30s. In his excavation in the 1930s and also by Kenyon. With a plentiful food supply and ample water, the inhabitants of Jericho could have held out for several years. Interesting. Look at that. Here's pictures of it. Here's these big clay pots, still intact today, and inside is actual grain still there. From that time period, in the same layer with those potsherds. That guarantees it, gives it the seal of approval, that it was around the same time. So jars full of grain, found by John Garstang at Jericho. They were charred in the fire that the Israelites set to destroy the Canaanite city. So the jars of clay were actually burnt with seed in them. Take a look at Joshua 6, verse 20. Another detail that you're going to see is pretty amazing when we look at archaeology. Joshua 6, verse 20. So the people shouted when the priests blew the trumpets, and it happened when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall fell down flat. Then the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. Now, that's interesting. I mean, it's straightforward, right? You look at it and you say, okay, it makes sense. But how did it actually work out? Take a look at this. Brian Wood, he says, Kenyon found fallen red bricks piling nearly to the top of the revetment. Now, you remember the revetment? I don't know if I have a map. Maybe it's next. Yeah. The revetment was this piece that kind of came out here, that came up to the wall, and then here's the first wall, and then all the way. So basically what he's saying is, the crumbling wall tumbled down and made a clear path. Because really, you can't really get up this, can you, this wall? But if this fell down and created a way for you to just climb up real easy into the city, that would work. So this is what he said. These probably came from the wall on the summit of the bank, the brickwork above the revetment. In other words, she found a heap of bricks from the fallen city walls. The renewed Italian-Palestinian excavations found exactly the same thing at the southern end of the mound in 1997. So we have proof. The walls definitely fell down and created a way for the children of Israel to go straight up, just like that verse says. The people went up into the city, every man straight forward before him, and they took the city. Once again, validated by archaeology. So, this is interesting, okay? So here's the outer walls. What this shows is basically all the digs that have happened around over time by these Garstang guys and Brian Wood and Kenyon. They basically took a little sampling all around the walls. This is what they found. At the north end, so we're looking, here's the north end, okay? So I'm kind of showing, here's a circle. Let's concentrate on this north part of the city over here, this comment. At the north end, numbers 1 to 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, a portion of the mud brick wall at the top, atop the stone retaining wall survived, demonstrating that the city did not fall in this area. Now, this is interesting. Let's go back to the picture. Oh, yeah, this right here. What they've shown through the archaeology of digging it up, obviously in the city proper, right, you'd be the safest, wouldn't you? You got two sets of walls. Okay, so, you know, you got this set, and then you got this set. So in here was the city proper. If you buy land, which land do you think is going to be more expensive? This land or this land? Obviously this land, right? Because it's like the safest, it's the most secure land. That's where all the big expensive houses were. What they found out here in their digs, that's where the slums were. That's where people who didn't have money would live, right? And then you had the farmers outside the walls. The reason that's interesting is because in cities that they actually have even better archaeology data on, what they find is the brothels, the prostitute homes, would be embanked right against this wall, the upper wall, in the slum area. So if we're taking a look at Joshua, and we're thinking about Rahab, you'd think Rahab would probably be outside the walls, attached to the walls, as Joshua says, right here somewhere. And what do they find? They find exactly what you think. The top of the wall, the northern part of the wall, did not all fall down. And then on this part, when they took a look from east, west, and south, nothing remains of the mud brick city wall at other points investigated, showing that it had collapsed everywhere else. So everywhere else, the whole wall fell down, except for on the northern side. That's what they found. Rahab lived in the wall of the city, where the wall did not fall. How incredible is that? And even Kathleen Kenyon, look what she said. The German excavation of 1907 to 1909, and this is Kathleen Kenyon, who's basically saying that the Bible is not true. She says, it found that on the north, a short stretch of the lower city wall did not fall as everywhere else. A portion of that mud brick wall was still standing to a height of 8 feet. What is more, there were houses built against the wall. It is quite possible that this is where Rahab's house was located. Interesting. She says that. What is she saying? She's got a mixed up story. 6 verse 24. It says there, this is the last step of what they did. They burned the city and all that was in it with fire. Total destruction of Jericho. Only the silver and gold and the vessels of bronze and iron they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. So that's what they did, right? They burnt the city with fire. everyone was killed, and then the stuff was taken to put into the Lord's treasury. So that's what they did. That's how they handled this city. And what do we find? Kathleen Kenyon's own words. The destruction was complete. So she might get the timing wrong, but whatever happened, her data says that the destruction was complete. Walls and floors were blackened or reddened by fire, and every room was filled with fallen bricks, timbers, and household utensils. In most rooms, the fallen debris was heavily burnt, but the collapse of the walls of the eastern rooms seems to have taken place before they were affected by fire. Interesting, because if you thought that the whole city just would have burnt down and then the walls would have collapsed from the burning, that couldn't happen. What she's saying is things collapsed before they were burnt. What's the process in Joshua chapter 6? The walls fell down, the city collapsed, and then it was burnt with fire. So when you start digging through the layers, you'd find parts that weren't burnt, right? That's what you'd think you'd find. And lo and behold, even Kathleen Kenyon says that's what you find. Incredible. And look at Brian Wood. Jericho was once thought to be a Bible problem because of the seeming disagreement between archaeology and the Bible. When the archaeology is correctly interpreted, however, the opposite is the case. The archaeological evidence supports the historical accuracy of the Bible account in every detail. Every aspect of the story that could possibly be verified by the findings of archaeology is, in fact, verified. That's pretty amazing. All of a sudden, the story's a little different, isn't it? This is how I feel now. Jericho's walls were destroyed by Joshua. Archaeology proves that. Evidence suggests Joshua and Israel did conquer a walled Jericho. The story of Joshua 2-6 is absolutely true. Therefore, my trust in the Bible is restored. If Joshua 6 is true, that God created a miracle whereby walls could fall down and men could go into a city totally unprotected and do what God wanted them to do, thousands of years ago, why wouldn't I believe the rest of it? This is the most ridiculous story in the Bible, besides maybe resurrections, you know, a few other things, but man, you think about it. If I believe that, I'm willing to believe anything in the Bible. And so, that's my challenge to you, young people. When we look at this, which side are you on? Kathleen Kenyon thought she had the whole story. First of all, her base or context was too small, and her findings weren't complete. She didn't look at other people's evidence. So Brian Wood comes along, finds that the story is totally accurate and in the right time period because of small potsherds. It's amazing, eh? What these guys can find. So the question is, I guess, do you trust the Bible? And young people, look, this is just going to get worse. When you're at school, how embarrassed are you to talk about Jericho? I mean, it's a joke, right? I think about the discussions that I had, how embarrassing it was sometimes. You actually believe that? You actually think that that kind of thing happened? Yeah, I do. You know, and this kind of thing really straightens me out, really makes me think seriously. Think about similar stories in the Bible, young people. You can go and look at your own if you want to look at archaeology. Dig up some things about Jerusalem, how it has been destroyed in the past. About Babylon, about Nineveh, Tyre, Egypt. Each place has its own unique story in the archaeological record that totally ties in with Scripture. And it's only there waiting for you to find it out and to build your faith. And think about the future. If I believe Jericho happened, and I believe God was in control, the Bible has a lot of weight behind it to tell me what's going to happen in the future. If the God who wrote the walls of Jericho fell also said, I promise that there's going to be a kingdom on earth set up, I believe it. I have to. I'm compelled. And this is some of the things that have yet to be fulfilled. Jerusalem to be made the center of the world, spiritually speaking. The temple to be set up. Christ's return to happen. Do I believe it? If I say that Jericho happened, I should be prepared to say that I believe that Christ will return. Sometimes it's hard to say that. The resurrection. How ridiculous is that? People actually rising out of the graves to stand before the Lord. That's amazing. But if Jericho's walls fell, which is an impossibility, I believe that'll happen. Judgment. Europe being destroyed. The world being incorporated into God's promises at the end of the day. I believe that'll happen. Simply, not just, but simply because Jericho's walls fell. And I know it's true. So, brothers and sisters, young people, I think this has been a good little bit of time to kind of talk about some of the things that we find in Joshua's life. And hopefully it's not just been learning lessons, about how we want to be like Joshua, but it's also strengthening your faith in some of the amazing things that people have found about the trueness of the Bible.